You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Today is February 9th, 2021. Well, there's a book out there that you absolutely have to get called The Small Business Tax Guide. I would call it the Small Business Tax Survival Guide because, look, I've started probably a couple dozen businesses. If you don't plan your taxes out in advance, they're going to be planned out for you by the IRS, by the government, by the Treasury, by the law, and you don't want to be in that situation. Really important that when you set the company up, it's set up properly. I mean, I know an instance person set up an LLC and then realized that I'm going to be taxed on Social Security for everything, but it was too late in the day to change it to a sub S so that they could get a salary and then the rest be untaxed as far as self-employment tax goes. That's just a small example. We are really blessed to have an expert in the field on the topic. I'm talking about Dan Pilla, and Dan has written numerous books, really a tax litigator extraordinaire, considered America's leading taxpayer defense, taxpayer rights attorney, IRS abuse prevention and cure. And Dan, it's so great to have you on the show. Really, someone of your caliber really can help you out there to really avoid a lot of pitfalls. We'd like to get your emails, tax issues that you have had in the past that you could have avoided or at least had a chance of prevailing upon had you planned properly. Just send the email to kl@carrielutz.com. Dan, pleasure to have you. So I'm a recovering attorney. I'm not so sure if I'm recovering anymore, but we're really thrilled to have you on the show here. So tax litigation, tax law, not the most glamorous area of the legal profession. How'd you wind up there?
Well, I wound up here as a result of problems my father had with the IRS. You know, you talk about small businesses doing it wrong. Boy, he was kind of the poster child for that. He had a small business in our hometown of St. Paul, Minnesota, got behind on his employees withholding taxes. And in 1974, Carrie, when I was just a kid, they padlocked the doors and auctioned the equipment off for a couple cents in the dollar. And then later on, 1978, 79, they turned their attention to the family home and they tried to seize and sell it for the back tax liability. And that's when I got started. It was just strictly a matter of desperation at that point, trying to help my family deal with that problem. And, you know, I've been dealing like, so I got essentially pushed into this situation, trying to help my family. And I've been dealing with this ever since. I've been more than 40 years in this practice, specifically in the area of taxpayers' rights issues, IRS problems resolution, and IRS abuse prevention and cure, focusing specifically on those areas. And in the last 40 years, Carrie, I've represented hundreds of small businesses in every kind of tax case you can imagine. And the Small Business Tax Guide is kind of the culmination of all that litigation. What are the problems that small businesses make that get them in trouble with the IRS, that end them up in the worst case scenario? What are those problems? How to avoid them? That's what the book is all about.
Okay, so looking back, Dan, to 1974, obviously you weren't an attorney then. Didn't really know much about it. But if the Dan now could go back to that Dan and defend your father, probably could have saved your father and you and your family a lot of heartache, huh?
Oh, there's no question about it, Carrie. You're absolutely right. But I'll tell you something. What happened to my father never has to happen to another American, not only because of the information in the Small Business Tax Guide, but because of fundamental changes in the law. You know, I was a consultant to the National Commission on Restructuring the IRS in 1997. All right. So we're going back a long time here now. And I made 33 specific recommendations for legislative changes to the Internal Revenue Code that would beef up taxpayers' rights. And one of those changes was the adoption of what we now call the collection due process appeal rights. And so under these collection due process appeal rights, Kerry, the IRS cannot lay a glove on a nickel's worth of your assets until after you've had an opportunity for what's called the collection due process appeal, where you can go in and essentially negotiate with the IRS in any number of different areas. Those rights didn't exist in 1974. They exist now. So what happened to my dad never has to happen to another American, but you need to know what your rights are. You need to know how this stuff works.
So judge, jury, and executioner, that's kind of the role of the IRS.
Well yeah, and there's a very important, I mean, you make a point here that really should be developed here for just a minute. In every other area of the law, Kerry, I don't care what government agency you're dealing with, the burden of proof, typically speaking, is on the government. That's not true with the IRS. When you're dealing with the Internal Revenue Service, particularly in a civil situation, well, especially in a civil situation, they never have to prove you did it wrong. You have to prove you did it right. So the IRS never needs a reason to challenge the position that you put on your tax return. They never need a reason to challenge this deduction or that deduction. They could do it quite literally because they feel like it. And that's a legal standard, Kerry, that applies to the IRS. We're doing it because we feel like it. All right. And you've got the burden of proof. And so small businesses get in trouble with the IRS because they do not know how to carry that burden of proof. And that's one of the most valuable things about the book, is showing you exactly how to prove the legitimacy of your position.
And you also don't have a right to your Fifth Amendment when you're dealing with the IRS either. Anything you can and say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You can't shut up. But one thing that I like about using an attorney who's also an accountant is accountants don't have any privilege, but attorneys, on the other hand, have privilege. So a lot of an attorney, tax attorney's work, even if he's doing your taxes for you, is going to be privileged. And that's going to really throw a monkey wrench in their ability to get you.
Well, there's some limitations on that, though, Kerry, and it's important. In fact, I got a chapter in the Small Business Tax Guide that talks about how to interact with a tax pro. And I talk about the difference between an attorney and accountant and what the privilege relationships are. There is such a thing as a federal tax practitioner privilege. All right. So if you're a CPA or an IRS enrolled agent, then there is a privilege that arises, but it only applies in a civil situation. The minute the F word is raised by the IRS, that is to say fraud, the minute the situation turns into a potential criminal case, now that privilege does not apply to CPAs and enrolled agents. It does apply to attorneys. So this is very, very important for people to understand. So there is a bit of a privilege, but it's limited.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, it's I haven't found it to be very valuable, thank God. Anytime I've dealt with the IRS, it's like, just pay us the money. And if you overpaid, we'll give it back to you. I've never had overzealous agents come after me, but I've never dealt with them myself. One thing my accountant always said is, not talk to them. Do not let them into your place of business. Nowadays, you have to, because they want to make sure you're not running a money laundering operation. But, you know, I would just give all the records to my attorney / CPA and let him handle it, because anything you do as an individual, as a layperson, you have no idea what you're doing, what you're dealing with, whether you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing. The only thing I deal with the IRS with, honestly, Dan, is if I sent them a check and they didn't get it, or if they levied a penalty, and then I would just send them a letter. Because otherwise, I'm going to pay my accountant for it, and I can say the same stuff he can. But otherwise, I will never deal with the IRS personally.
Well, if you don't have any idea what you're doing, Kerry, then you're absolutely right. You cannot deal with the IRS personally. So often I get involved in cases after the taxpayer has gone through, let's say, the first two or three meetings with a tax examiner or maybe a collection officer. And they've said some things that they shouldn't have said or done some things that they shouldn't have done. And now you're playing catch up and you're trying to mitigate these things. And it becomes very difficult. What people need to understand is that the IRS IRS, when they're making contact with you, they are not there to help you. They're not your friend. If it's a civil examination, they're looking for ways to get money from you. If it's a criminal investigation, which is rare, very, very rare, but they happen, obviously. If it's a criminal investigation, these special agents that knock on the door and want to talk to you are not there to help you. They're there to gather evidence, to frame up a case. Well, frame might be a bad word, to build up a case for a criminal prosecution. That's what it's all about. And so when we're talking about the civil examination, what traps people is they don't understand what their burden of proof is. They don't understand what they're supposed to do in order to prove that the tax return is correct. And this is vitally important to understand this stuff.
Absolutely. So I have two funny little anecdotal stories here. Had a lady friend one time, and she was being audited by the IRS, and she worked out of her home, and her accountant actually let them conduct the audit in her home. Now, this is madness.
Yeah, it's pure insanity.
Never have them conduct the audit in your place of business because they're out there listening to things. Oh, what do we do with this $10,000 in cash here? How do we treat that accounting there? The other story I had.
People need to, you make a very important point here, Gary. People need to understand that the IRS does not have a right to come into the private areas of your business, and they have absolutely no right to come into your house. The only way the IRS can gain access to private property is just like any law enforcement agency. They either got to have your permission or they got to have a warrant. Now, there is no circumstances under which the IRS tax audit function is going to go get a warrant to come into your house to look in, underneath your mattress or in your underwear drawer for the $20 you might have stashed there. And as far as a criminal investigation is concerned, warrants are very rare in that situation as well. They happen, but they're rare. But the fact is, in a civil audit situation, you have no requirement to allow the IRS into your house or into the private areas of your business. Now, when I say private areas of your business, what I'm talking about is let's suppose you have a restaurant. And in the back of the restaurant, you've got a couple of offices where you do your record keeping and pay your bills and so on. The IRS can certainly walk in the front door of the restaurant just like anybody else can. But just because they can come into the public area doesn't mean they have access to the private area. When you've got a sign on your door that says employees only, the Internal Revenue Service cannot gain access to those areas of your business without a warrant or B, your express permission. And they're not going to get a warrant, as I said, in a civil case, and you don't have to give them your permission. And so people need to understand this. The simple fact that they flash their ID, and of course, revenue agents, tax auditors don't even have a badge. They've got their ID card, right? So just because they flash an ID card doesn't mean that they automatically get access to the private areas of your life. They don't. They do not. And you don't have to give them access to those areas.
It's so true. And I think now they want to see that there's actually a business there. They don't need to inspect the premises. They kind of walk in the door, take a look. Oh, this is a real business.
Yeah.
But outside of that, really no rights. The other one was a friend of mine. He's passed away a long time ago. This was in the 70s. He was doing commodity straddles. And back then, if you were a commodity trader, you literally didn't pay any taxes because you could do these straddles and show paper losses all day. And he had a guy come. And they put him in a room in like a storage room. They turned the air conditioner down to like 50 degrees. The guy spent like 6 weeks there shivering. Finally, he came out and said, I don't know. I'm sending it all to DC and it's their problem. And he never heard another word about it.
Right.
So what are the top three things that people do wrong when they're setting up a business that costs them tax dollars?
Don't just survive. Thrive, the Financial Survival Network.
Today's show is brought to you by GR Silver Mining, ticker symbol TSX, GRSL, OTC, GRSLF, and their website at grsilvermining.com. The company is extremely well capitalized, currently has a resource of 40 million ounces of silver, and is looking to triple that number in just the next year alone. Its management team is first rate, headed up by Marcio Fonseca, a geologist with vast experience in mining operations and the financial sector. sector as well. With all this going for it, and with silver trading over $25 the ounce, there's no telling how high GR Silver Mining will go. So go to grsilvermining.com to stay up to date on the latest developments and get on their notification list today.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Well, the first thing you touched on this at the top of the program, the first thing is selecting the wrong entity from which to do business. One of the things that I do in the Small Business Tax Guide is I identify all eight entities that a person can use to operate out of: sole proprietorship or a qualified joint venture, partnership, sub-S corporation. We don't have to list them all out, but the point is I show the pros and cons of each entity, what the advantages and disadvantages are of operating under each one, and most importantly, carry what the compliance responsibilities are based on the entity that you select. This is what blindsides people. This is where they make mistakes, is they say, oh, you know, my brother-in-law's nephew's babysitter told me I should use an S corporation. Okay, fine. An S corporation has a lot of value, no question about that, but it also carries very significant compliance responsibilities. And people never, and I mean never, know what the compliance responsibilities are for a particular entity when they get into that entity. So you got to understand what the compliance responsibilities are for each one of them. Yeah. And so I take readers through that scenario. The other thing that we talk about is what I'll tell you, one of the things that crushes business, and frankly, this is where my dad got in trouble. And that is with the improper use of independent contractors. One of the most attractive things right now for small businesses is to have their labor personnel be qualified or be functioning as independent contractors as opposed to employees. Well, if you're an independent contractor, if your business is working with independent contractors, you know, you don't have to withhold taxes and you don't have to comply with minimum wage and you don't have to, you know, agency reporting requirements, none of that stuff applies. And so it's advantageous, certainly, to use independent contractors. But you got to follow the rules, Kerry. They're very clear, distinct rules on who qualifies as an independent contractor and who does not. And businesses mess this up all the time. And so I take you through this process so that you understand who's a legitimate employee and who's a legitimate independent contractor and who's not. And I'm telling you, this chapter alone is going to save small businesses a lot of hassle and a lot of heartache.
Hey, I think it's management and control used to be the measurement. As long as you're not in California, then everyone's an employee.
Yeah, everybody's an employee. Yeah. 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 I mean, it boils down to control. That's really what it is. And who controls the workplace, the worker, and the man, and the manner in which the work is performed. If the company is controlling those things, then the worker's an employee. If the worker controls those things, then the worker's an independent contractor. So it boils down to control. In the book, I take you step by step through all of these elements that constitute control. And I break it down for you very, very simply and clearly so anybody can read through this stuff and make an intelligent decision. This worker's an employee or not. And now you're going to keep yourself out of trouble.
And if you mess up and call somebody an independent contractor and they're really an employee, if they put in overtime more than 40 hours a week, you could be liable for tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah. It's massive liability. It's massive liability. Because what happens, Kerry, is not only do you have penalties for doing that, but the tax liability is calculated on the basis of the amount of money that should have been withheld from the worker. Even though you paid the worker in full, the IRS is going to come along and assess you with a tax liability equal to what they should have paid, plus the penalties, plus the interest. And it's a massive liability.
Devastating. And and then your third place where business owners, small business owners especially, screw up.
All right, I'll tell you, the single most expensive mistake probably the small business owners make is not tracking their mileage properly. One of the most valuable deductions that business owners have is the deduction for their automobile, and almost all of them screw it up because they don't keep their mileage log properly, they don't track their mileage properly, they don't understand what constitutes legitimate business mileage and what does not. And in the book, I show you graphically, I've created a series of flow charts, Carrie, that very simply take the reader through the process of understanding what type of travel constitutes business travel and what does not. And then I show you precisely how to track it. And this is a very, very costly mistake. And not only are businesses not keeping the proper records, which cost them deductions in the first place, but if they're audited, they lose the deduction they did claim because they don't have the records. So I show you not only what constitutes the legitimate mileage deduction in the first place, but how to track it and how to prove it to the IRS so you get every dollar's worth of deduction that you're entitled to get.
And now with computers, smartphones, and all of that, documenting all your expenses. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you remember the days, Dan, when American Express used to send you a copy of the receipt, the actual carbon copy. Now it's all on your list there. It's so easy to track it, easier than ever.
Yeah, and in the book, I talk about a couple of internet services, and there's new stuff every day coming out. You know that. But the fact of the matter is that tracking mileage has never been easier with your smartphone and the GPS on your phone. It tells you exactly where you've been, exactly what the mileage is. And I'll tell you something else. This is an advantage for businesses that haven't kept proper records in the past. You know, the IRS can go back 3 years to audit a tax return. In unusual circumstances, they can go back 6 years, but generally it's three. All right. So if you don't have a proper mileage log, you can use these smartphone devices to figure out what your mileage is and do a reconstruction. I talk about reconstructing deductions for which you don't have proper records. Just because you didn't keep the records doesn't mean the deduction's lost if you go back and follow the proper steps to reconstruct it.
Interesting. Hey, well, sounds like there's a lot of landmines. Sounds like you really need to get this book because, like I say, it should be called the survival guide here. You know, really, it's just so vital that you keep track of this stuff because if you don't and you get audited, and it's always possible, could be big bucks. Hey, what are your odds of getting audited now, Dan?
Well, the odds of a computer audit, Carrie, are 100%. The IRS puts every single tax return filed through a computer analysis called a DIF score. It's called the Discriminant Income Function System. It compares every line of your tax return with national and regional statistical averages for a person in your same income category and profession. And if any line of your return is out of sync with those averages, the difference is scored. It's called a DIF score. The higher the score, the more likely it is you are to go through a face-to-face examination. And so 100% of the returns are scored that way. And most of the returns that get a high DIF score don't go through a face-to-face examination. And this is where the IRS's numbers are misleading. The face-to-face audits are dropping as a percentage, Carrie, but the number of computerized audits, or I should say correspondence audits that grow out of these computer analysis that I just described, those are rising exponentially. They're going up a couple hundred percentage points every year. So, they double, triple all the time, these computer audits. The IRS is doing more through the mail and less through face-to-face. So just because the face-to-face ratio is dropping, don't let that lull you into a false sense of security. They're still looking at millions and millions of tax returns every single year.
And they're bringing big data into it. The same things that Google does to sell you stuff, advertising, big data analytics, as it's called. That's what they're starting to use now, starting to actually get records from other sources, see what you really spend.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's funny you mentioned that, Carrie, because I wrote an article on that about a year and a half ago, maybe, where I talked about the contract that the IRS entered into with the company to allow them to build a very, very sophisticated computer program to mine data from all public sources. Facebook, Twitter, emails, all of that. I mean, millions and millions and millions of bytes of information that the IRS is now systematically processing for the purposes of using that information to better target audit, to better identify audit targets. So they're honing in on the people they think that's going to get them the most money through the audit process.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. And sounds like a little overreaching or a lot of overreaching
on the IRS
part. I don't know anything that they say in their charter that allows them to go to external sources of data other than once they've already targeted you, but due to your return, then they can use
Let's talk about that for just a minute. As long as you bring that up, there's a provision in the Internal Revenue Code section 7602 of the Internal Revenue Code allows the Internal Revenue Service to contact any person with respect to the investigation of a tax liability of any other person. So it doesn't need to be an existing liability. It could be a liability that's under investigation, right? This statute is as broad as it can possibly be, allowing the Internal Revenue Service to go to third-party sources to get any information that might bear on that person's tax liability.
But Dan, you know, and I know as attorneys, this law, well, might be used as a catch-all, was never intended for this purpose to allow the IRS to data mine. It was there to enhance their ability to conduct investigations that are already there, ongoing.
Right.
Not to go finding stuff to find the basis to conduct investigations.
You're right with respect to that particular statute. Code section 7601 allows the Internal Revenue Service to canvass, Carrie, and that's the word that's used in the statute, allows the IRS to canvass the area to determine whether any particular person is not in compliance with the law. And I mean, these two statutes back to back, man, they create as broad a net as you can imagine.
A total monster, Dan. We lost the video, but that's okay. Hey, and you know that the canvassing thing was used for cash businesses that were avoiding taxes so they could canvass clients, customers, et cetera, and actually come up with evidence of that fact. Again, laws that are brought on their face that weren't intended for this purpose, but that's what all government does. Hey, Dan, we want to get your book. We want to connect with you on the web. Where do we go?
Yeah, sure. The book is Dan Pilla's Small Business Tax Guide, and my website is taxhelponline.com. It's all one word, no spaces of any kind, taxhelponline.com, Dan Pilla's Small Business Tax Guide. And I'll say this, Carrie, anybody that buys a book off my website, this book or any other book that we offer, gets a free 15-minute consultation directly with me personally.
All right. The link is in the show notes to this interview on Financial Survival Network. You've had a problem with the IRS, hey, send us an email. Let us know what happened, how much it cost you, or maybe you got away for nothing. And the email address is kl@carrielutz.com. This definitely falls under the category of financial survival. And our website, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for your free newsletter. Dan, total pleasure. Thanks so much for stopping by.
My pleasure, Carrie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.